Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. Dear brothers and sisters, the Holy Spirit is with you.
I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love.
And welcome to What the World Needs Now. My name is Ken Johnston. I'll be your host for the next hour and look forward to being with you, and especially with the guest today, do a little bit of enlightening. Want to start out by mentioning that coming up on Sunday, April the 22nd, is our annual Wake Up America dinner, one of two fundraisers we have here at In His Sign, in order to raise much-needed funds to help us complete this 40th year of our radio apostolate. We'll be gathering, like I said, Sunday, April the 22nd from 1:30 to 5:30 at the Malvern Retreat House out at 315 South Warren Avenue. We're going to get together and break bread and have a delicious meal together, as well as a couple of speakers and a silent auction and other ways to help us raise money in order to keep this wonderful radio apostolate going, like I said, for some 40 years now. The cost is $55 per person or $400 for a table of eight, so why not grab seven friends and come on out and spend the afternoon with us, learn a little bit more about the apostolate, and really have a great time. I've been blessed to have been there for the last five, six, maybe even 7 years now. But just an awesome afternoon that we have each year, and I look forward to meeting you. So come on out. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners today. Thank you for being with us for whatever part of the 2 hours you can join us. We're here Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 and different shows each day. And I'm blessed today and blessed in this hour each week to be able to talk to somebody in the Catholic world about current events or canonizations that are going on or what have you. And today I'm joined by Mr. Dennis Sadowski. He's a reporter with Catholic News, and often you'll see his articles. If you get the emails from CatholicPhilly.com, from time to time you'll see articles that are put out by Dennis. And you know what, Dennis? I left your bio sitting on my desk at home when I left for the radio station, so I'm kind of ad-libbing it here. And but I do know that it seems a majority of your work has to do with politics and the Catholic world. So the reason Harry had reached out to you a few weeks back was to in regard to a couple of articles you'd written recently about what's going on with Congress and the budget and the impact, the potential impact that it may have on the nation's poor. And I from my own perspective, we go back and forth between what's fake news and real news, and it just seems that anymore everything is in the extremes, that you either got to be far left or far right, where I think most of us are somewhere in the middle. And even the bills that have been passed and the budget that we're looking at, to see that it's one side completely votes for it. In the case of the most recent vote, I think in your article it said all but 12 Republicans had voted for it and zero Democrats. And I'm 56 going on 57, and I can remember days when the parties got together and negotiated and compromised and had true bipartisan bills. And it just seems like anymore that those days are gone, that it's whoever tends to be in power at the time, it seems to be all one side and none from the other. And I know a lot of that has to do with politics and getting reelected, but somewhere, some way, I think the country's got to get to a middle ground.
That may very well be the case.
Yeah.
So it's difficult because sometimes I'm here as a reporter, and obviously as a journalist, I can't take sides. I can have opinions, but I can't take sides.
Sure.
And you have to be able to ask the right kinds of questions, probing questions, and hope that the people that you're interviewing, whether it's members of Congress, their staff, and even those that are advocates on one side or the other, whether they're for a piece of legislation or against it, that they're coming at it from a little less idealistic or ideological way, I should say, and that they're looking at the common good, as the bishops ask us to do.
And so, again, as an outsider and somebody that doesn't have direct access to either those that are in Congress or the USCCB, it's not. I don't think it's all one or all the other. And I'm not sure, not that they're players, but all the players that are involved in this, because it's not a simple thing when you have 500 or more folks that are voting on these bills. You have however many bishops in the conference, along with the folks that work for them, in order to bring them information. So it seems from an outsider it's awfully complicated, and that's one of the reasons why I was excited that you were willing to come on, because somewhere there's the truth. And I think, and just as you said, I think that as a reporter, that is your goal, to determine what the truth is and to report on the truth. Yet so many people, especially today, the truth is a moving target, that you can, and even individuals sometimes are encouraged to seek their own truth when somewhere in the midst of all this, in the root of all this, the truth really exists. And I often wonder myself how often that gets presented to us, and not necessarily in the reporting that you do and that we see out of the National Catholic Reporter and Register and these different things, but on the main news that people have access to, being the mainstream media.
Well, exactly. What we have to keep in mind is that we need to stop looking at things, what's the benefit for me, for myself?
Right.
What we've lost sight of caring for each other in our country, unfortunately. And the bishops will acknowledge that, and we talk about that. They talk about that in their statements, their letters to Congress, their pastoral letters to us in the pews as teaching documents that we can read and study. Those are the things that they hold up, that human life and dignity is the most important thing that we are all called to do, whether we're radio hosts, journalists, members of Congress, homemakers, students in school, factory workers, whoever. We have to keep that in mind, and that seems to be lost. And one of the things that I'm working on now is about the situation in Parkland, Florida, and some of the legislation that might evolve out of that for controlling guns and access to guns and mental health services and so on. But the idea, too, that the bishops tell us is, let us remember that these are all human beings, and we seem to have lost the importance of human life here, how important that is to preserve and protect when we adhere to ideological lines or only those things that we want to do to satisfy ourselves or appease our anger.
No, absolutely. And I think that the Catholic Church has always been in the lead in those areas. And, not so many years ago, it was the Catholic Church that came up with the movie rating system, and I think had seemed to have more influence than it does today. So you talk about the letters and what have you that the conference would put together and forward on to Congress. Do they still carry the weight that they used to, do you think, Dennis?
It depends.
Okay.
As it always does.
Yeah.
It probably depends largely on the issue.
Okay.
I think in today's Congress and in today's politics here in Washington, and I've been here in 10 years since 2008, and it really has changed in that time. People are much more responding to, our elected officials are much more responding to party rather than to people, unfortunately, in my estimation. And that makes it much more difficult to keep in mind that it's people that need our help, that are depending upon us to do the right thing. And so, yeah, when the bishops put out a statement or a letter asking for a particular stance, it doesn't always get the attention that it used to in the past because of the adherence to party rather than people.
And in the end, the folks that are in these positions, they really do hold the or have the capability to make serious decisions about those things that could seriously impact any of us. And, you know, the recent legislation that we contacted you about, you know, with the tax legislation and the budget resolutions, you know, for somebody that this isn't my full-time job. I come in here on Wednesdays and do a couple hours. I have a full-time job where I draw my salary from. And I'll admit that it was nice to see a little bump in my take-home pay when the taxes went down. But I don't know that we always get all the implications of what that was or the long-term effects. And I know in the exchange that we had leading up to the show that, you know, we can't predict the future. You know, things are always subject to change. Legislation can change. But in the legislation that has passed most recently, I'm not one that would comb through all the documents to find out exactly what was cut and what wasn't cut or potentially cut and how they're making it up. And, you know, if you read the news and see, you know, the market being up and people taking home more money, that, you know, everybody would, at least they got that bump of saying, hey, that was a good thing for me. But like you said, that's not what it's about, right? It's about everyone, not just the individual.
Exactly. As Bishop DeWayne said in letters right around the time that the legislation on the tax, what they call it, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is the formal name of it. When that was adopted, Bishop DeWayne, who was the chairman of the Bishop's Committee on Domestic Justice and Human Development, said that while the law achieves some laudable things, there are some problematic provisions that have to be addressed because of their negative impact on people, particularly poor people. The big concern that he and Sister Donna Markham, President and CEO of Catholic Charities USA, for example, as well as the folks at Catholic Relief Services, Sean Callahan, who's their president and CEO, they're concerned about that because of the tax cut, there's less money that's going to be coming through to the federal government, $1 trillion, roughly or more over the next decade. And somewhere along the line, the budget's going to have to be balanced more equitably. And so where is that money going to come from? When you look at the proposal from the White House, the Office of Management and Budget right now for fiscal year 2019, they're cutting social services, Medicaid, low-income heating assistance, housing vouchers, education grants for students to go to college, a whole realm of social services that have existed for decades and have been successful in helping people stay in their homes, reach up a little bit out of poverty. But it's more than likely those are the ones that are going to have to be cut, because when you look at the budget that's been submitted, the military budget gets huge increases, 13-14%. While we're still having to not only cover the $1 trillion deficits from the tax cuts, but also the other increase that's going in another direction. And so the bishops are concerned, Catholic Charities is concerned, Catholic Relief Services is concerned that these cuts will impact the poor, the elderly, the vulnerable the most significantly. And that's just not what Catholic social teaching calls us to adhere to.
Well, fortunately, we still have three branches of government, and the president alone can't pass a budget. So how does – is it lining up, or has it started to line up with those that are in Congress that are actually responsible for developing and passing the budget? Are they falling in line? Are they picking and choosing? And is that where lobbying comes in and deciding, you know, what's really going to get cut and what's not?
Exactly. The budget, I mean, Paul Ryan, who's Catholic, Speaker of the House, has said that the budget has pretty much dead on arrival, so has many leaders in both houses of Congress, has said that particular budget is dead on arrival. But still, it indicates the trend. They're going to be making cuts. Paul Ryan has said Medicaid, Medicare will be seeing some sort of cuts. Other programs, social services, the safety net, social safety net, will be seeing other cuts of some sort. Maybe not as drastic as proposed in the OMB budget, but there will be something that will have to pay for the tax cuts, the revenues that are being lost, and the increase in the military budget. Already we saw in the fiscal 2018 budget that got us to today, when they adopted a framework to which they still need to adopt the 2018 budget for the fiscal year that ends on September 30th. They have till March 23rd to resolve that. That already they've increased the military budget, and they are looking at having to finalize any sort of allocations in other areas, which probably will mean cuts in social services, education, housing, et cetera, for this year, and let alone in 2019, which both parties agreed to 2 weeks ago, but still probably will pose some challenges for the vulnerable.
And so for me, and the reason I'm hesitating, like this is news to me because it's. And it probably shouldn't be, and it may not be for a lot of our listeners. And you know, when we keep in touch with you know, what's going on, that it seems when things seem to be going well economically, that now this is the foot's about to drop, and that's why I appreciate the work that you do, and to bring us this. To bring us this knowledge. And just because the economy and everybody, I think both sides of the aisle, certainly the Democrats when they were in the Oval Office over the last 8 years bragged about how great the economy was doing, and obviously under this administration, you know, with the market doing well, even though it's been down the last few weeks, that their argument would be that because unemployment's at the lowest rate that it's been in years, and the unemployment rate amongst blacks is the lowest that it's ever been, that if everybody's working, is there really a harm? You know, is the harm as great in these cuts? And I would have to believe that it is, because there's still a percentage of the population that's not working, that's not even looking for work, that needs to be taken care of. So... again, I think in there somewhere is the truth, and it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. But I guess that going back to my original question is, you know, the idea that there is little to no compromise that goes on between the folks, and they all run, all these politicians, they all run on, I'm going to reach across the aisle and I'm going to make compromise happen. And then when they get there, it just does not seem to happen. And I don't know if it's because they're in the pocket of everybody that got them there, and they have to answer to them before they answer to those that actually elected them. But I think somewhere along the line, we got to find some kind of leadership that'll make that happen, that'll actually bring about a compromise.
Part of the problem that we have, too, is, and I've visited some of the representatives, and I – know a few of them personally from because I still live in Ohio, although I work in Washington. So I know my representatives personally. And the challenge they tell me is that they've got to be constantly fundraising. So not only are they looking at having their floor votes being examined very closely, they've got to be out there fundraising all the time. Breakfasts and dinners and fundraisers back in the district, $25 plate spaghetti dinners or $10 plate spaghetti dinners, what have you. It's a constant battle for them if they're solely focused on maintaining their job. You know, they get paid $174,000 a year, roughly. So that's a pretty good salary. That's far more than most people make, obviously, than the vast majority of people make. And so they're sitting pretty well. And their challenge is they want to maintain that job. So they're out there fundraising all the time. And so, yes, the critics would say that they're listening to those who are, especially the big donors, giving the money so that the little donors or the non-donors, the vast majority of the people they represent, are not getting their voice heard. And that's the challenge that we as people of faith in the pews and so on need to cut through all the blather that we hear and explore and take a little more time to really understand the legislative process, what is in a bill. When the bishops say something, maybe pay attention to it if it's on the diocesan website or your diocesan publication or your diocesan social action office sends out a legislative alert. Be involved and take a little more action in it and pay attention to it so that way you do know what's in a piece of legislation that may not help people, the things that do help people, the things that are good, the things that are bad. That's why these things exist.
And
that's our responsibility too in a democratic society.
Understood, and agree. And what you were just talking about, though, is the constant fundraising, and that they look at this the job that they have there in Washington as a job. And to me, I don't know if anybody else hears it the way I do, but it's almost disturbing that it's looked at as a career. When you know when somebody says it's a job, to me, I think career. And one of the things that just kills me is career politicians. And you know the idea that somebody you know can land a, you know get elected at whatever age and then spend the next 20 or 30 years, and the only thing they do is run for office and work in Congress. That I don't think that they necessarily lose touch with people. I think that they, you know, hobnob with enough people that they get an idea of what's going on. It's just that now, like you said, it's become a career where they're in a cycle of fundraising if they want to keep that career. And is there ever any talk of term limits?
Not that I hear in Congress. Yeah. Now, many states, again, I can refer to Ohio. They have 8-year limits on staying in office. So it would be 2 terms in the Senate and 4 terms in the House of Representatives. But an example, my particular state representative and state senator are mother and son, and they're just swapping positions. One is running was a senator and running for state representative. The other one is state senator and running for state representative. So you tell me what
that means.
How does
that happen? You know, man.
But that's the reality that we face. Term limits may be the answer. The answer really is political involvement by each of us, because that's what we're called to do.
Right.
The bishops put out a statement every 4 years in the presidential year, just before the presidential year, election year cycle starts, called Faithful Citizenship.
Right.
And it provides guidelines that we as voters, people of faith, can follow. They're not saying we should, but they're offering the basic tenets of Catholic social teaching, the 7 tenets that we need to keep in mind. They ask us to keep in mind when we consider a candidate. They're not saying that we should vote one way or the other. They're not saying that one candidate or one party is better than the other. and not every entity is going to adhere to each of those tenets of Catholic social teaching,
sure.
to be honest.
Right.
You know, we could say some are pro-life and some are not pro-life. Which are they? We don't know. Pro-life can take a broad meaning to some people. Other people, it's a very narrow definition. So it's what's called a prudential judgment. That's what we're called to as Catholics, though, to be involved in that prudential judgment and to seriously take our role as electors, to seriously take our role as people of faith to heart when we're considering who to vote for at the election booth.
Yeah, it just seems to me that to be wise in those areas, and that there's so much that goes on because government is so big, to try and keep tabs on all of it. I think at times for me it's just overwhelming, and so you tend to throw your hands up and give up on the process just because, like you said, so many times you may vote for somebody because of what they tell you they're going to do, and then once they get there, it seems to change. But you know,
it's difficult.
Yeah,
it's not easy. It's very difficult. But democracy is not easy. If we were to lose that democracy, we would be in far worse shape. And yes, democracy also allows us to not be involved. But that, in my, if I could take a stand as an American here, that's mm-hmm. being irresponsible.
Sure.
But I think we all need to remember that democracy is not easy, and that we all are responsible for learning as much as we can and participating in some way beyond the election booth.
Very good. Well, we're just about at the bottom of the hour, and you had mentioned earlier that you're thinking about doing some work on Parkland, and there's some other issues that we can delve into. But in the meantime, we're just going to take a short break, and when we come back, we can talk about those things. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Dennis Sadowski.
This is Dr. Carol Houghton of the Diocese of Harrisburg. I have been blessed in many ways by Kathleen McCarthy's retreats, days of reflection, preaching, and teaching, especially on In His Sign Catholic Radio. When Kathleen teaches from the Scripture and shares with us her personal stories, I am deeply touched and inspired. It is as if God is speaking directly from her heart to my heart. And when Kathleen reads from her books, In the Silence of My Heart, she shares with us what God has spoken to her, an intimate message of unconditional love and mercy. God has blessed Kathleen with many gifts, which she readily shares with others, by doing every day what the Lord has asked of her. And by the example of her yes to God, we too are encouraged to give our yes to God. For Kathleen's daily and public witness to the gospel, I will be forever grateful. For it is by this example that she challenges me to become a better disciple of the Lord.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. We'll be together for about the next 27 minutes or so. My guest today is Mr. Dennis Sadowski, and we've been talking a little bit about politics and its impact on the poor, and how the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops interacts with our congressmen and tries to help influence their decisions and their votes in order to do what's right for all of us. Just before we go back to Dennis, a reminder that coming up on Sunday, April the 22nd, we'll be having our Wake Up America dinner from 1:30 to 5:30 at the Malvern Retreat House. We didn't get the flyer up on the website yet. It'll be up there by tomorrow. In the meantime, if you give Maureen a call here at In His Sign, she can answer any questions you have and take your reservations. The number is 610-527-2906, 610-527-2906. Our guest today is Dennis Sadowski. He's a reporter with Catholic News and observes what goes on with both the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops as well as the United States government down there in Washington, and keeps us informed as to what's going on and the impact that legislation can have, especially for those of us that are Catholic or Christian, and you know, if we're living out that gospel that Jesus Christ proclaimed and watching out for our brothers and sisters who are in need. Sometimes that need has been left to be filled by the government, and in doing that, sometimes the decisions they make will have a direct impact on our brothers and sisters. So, as Dennis so eloquently said before the break, that as citizens and especially as Catholics, that we need to be engaged. We need to take care of watching these resources that are available to us to find out what's really going on. And as Dennis mentioned, you know, the documents that come out of the USCCB, and not necessarily the lengthy ones, but those shorter ones that ask us to call our legislators and let them know how we feel and how we'd like them to vote on a particular issue, is something that that should be done. And I think sometimes, because of laws, Dennis, and maybe before we talk about guns, we talk about you know, the laws that are supposedly on the books where our pastors and priests aren't allowed to preach from the pulpit and tell us who to elect. And like you said, they can tell us about those things that we need to look at and then weigh for ourselves as to which candidates are most closely aligned to what we believe as Catholics. But I know that there's some Catholic leaders that are still willing to, you know, put their neck on the line, if you will. Our Archbishop here in Philadelphia, Archbishop Chaput, is definitely one of those who's not afraid to speak out publicly and let people know not just how he feels, but how the Church feels about the things that are going on. Do you get that sense from others that you deal with?
I don't deal with all the bishops all that often. You know, obviously we cover the fall General Assembly and the spring General Assembly, and I get to, you know, talk with bishops, ask them their opinion about certain issues, and or just shoot the breeze, you know. Mm-hmm. But most of them are going to outside of their own local state, perhaps, or community, the bishops as a whole will let the USCCB guide the conversation, the stance on something like, for example, federal gun control legislation or Medicare and Medicaid or food and nutrition SNAP, for example. They will let that be pursued at the national level out of the office here in Washington, while obviously each state then has their own legislative priorities that they want to address. And that's where each bishop then in the state will plug into the state Catholic conference. And if it happens to be really local, then the bishop in his diocese or archdiocese will deal with the mayor or county commissioners or what have you to, if it's a matter of a justice issue, then they'll deal with those folks locally. But yeah, it depends on the issue, how they get involved and where they line up.
Very good. Okay. One of the things that most recently in the news, of course, is the mass shooting that went on down in Parkland, Florida, that took the lives of so many of our young people, injured many others. And, of course, it leads to the ongoing debate about gun control. And, you know, this is probably one of the oddest, and odd's not the right word, but it seems like so much rides on the whole idea of gun control. And when we were talking earlier about where the money comes from, and to get these folks reelected, and I think that's probably where they come down on gun control and gun rights is probably the biggest. Whether it's because of the lobby of the NRA or individuals who line up on either side of that issue, that it just seems like any time we have one of these horrible things that prop up, one side wants to, you know, comes across seemingly wanting to grab guns, and the other side is saying, you know, over my dead body. And I think somewhere in between, again, is something that can be done that, you know, incorporates a little bit of each and a compromise for legislation that may actually be smart. But again, because people line up on the extremes, it just seems that folks may say what they want us to hear. And then in the end, at least over the last few years, as far as I know, have really not done anything. So,
well, that's there's been a roadblock, yes, in getting any sort of legislation through, and in whether it's expanding background checks or mental health services for folks, or is, in fact, if you want to go that much farther, controlling handguns. The bishops have consistently supported what they call, quote, sensible regulation of handguns in their 2000 pastoral statement, Responsibility, Rehabilitation, and Restoration, a Catholic Perspective on Crime and Criminal Justice. They said, we support measures that control the sale and use of firearms and make them safer, especially efforts that prevent their unsupervised use by children or anyone other than the owner. And we reiterate our call for sensible regulation of handguns. They also were a supporter, USCCB was a supporter of the assault weapons ban that did exist from 1994 through 2004 when it expired. So the bishops have called for that, and you know, they're not going to say that's an infringement on the Second Amendment rights, because it's an issue of what's better for us as a society if we're having items out there that are killing people with very little regulation. Their concern is that that's an infringement upon human dignity. Even something simple as expanding background checks, Senator Toomey, your senator there in Pennsylvania, has tried to get through some sort of expanded background check legislation. He's a Republican. He worked with Joe Manchin, Senator of West Virginia, Democrat, who's also Catholic, on expanding background checks. But even that little bit of a step was defeated because the NRA refused to endorse their bill the last time it was put through in 2015. And today I was reached out to Senator Toomey's office, and because he was quoted in the Washington Post this week saying that he was looking for an opportunity to reintroduce that bill. His spokesman told me that, yeah, they're looking for the right opportunity. They think that there could be a chance this goes through. We'll see what happens. The NRA is very powerful. It does contribute millions and millions of dollars every year to office holders, policymakers, and does have a lot of sway in with members of Congress.
And so with the legislation that's been tried to attempted to be passed before, and this is where I think it's important that you actually know what's in that legislation, because for example, you know, people may hear background checks and think that, well, it's really not a big deal. They're just going to expand it. Maybe like right now, maybe at the local level, the state level, not necessarily at the federal level when they do a background check.
Well, it would be at the federal level, because that's where it goes through. And I believe it's through the Bureau of Tobacco and Firearms. That's the ones who would conduct the background checks, I believe. Or it could be through the FBI, but it would be at the federal level. And their particular legislation was to expand background checks to include unlicensed gun show dealers and online sales.
Okay.
So it seemed to be a logical step in a lot of people's minds, which the bishop supported too, but it didn't move.
Okay. And, you know, as somebody that's probably right of center on the gun issue, but sensible, and this is where it comes back, that there's got to be a compromise in there somewhere where, you know, there's sensible things that can be done, that because people line up on either side, it just seems like it's all or nothing, and I really don't have any hope that anything is going to get done yet again, and I really wish that you could persuade me otherwise, that, you know, something is going to be done this time.
I can't do that because I'm not in the minds of the members of Congress.
Right.
But even President Trump has called for several things over the last few days. I think they're more like trial balloons, to be honest.
Sure.
But in knowing how Washington works, so if it gets some positive feedback, or at least no negative feedback, these things might take a step forward. Things like, there's four things that I've seen that worked up: boosting mental health support for mental health services. But again, today in the New York Times, there's an op-ed piece by a psychiatrist who said she still couldn't stop anyone who, once they're deemed mentally stable or they're cured or whatever, that their issue has been resolved. Still, that doesn't mean they're not going to go out there and buy a gun afterwards and pursue what they might have pursued initially when they were quote-unquote mentally ill. Another point would be raising the legal age to own a gun from 18 to 21, because a lot of these mass shootings have occurred on high schools where people were just right around 17, 18 years old, 19 years old. So if you raise it to 21, that might limit it. Another thing that the White House has supported or has said they would support was improving background checks. They said they wanted to look into that. And another one, which may be a little bit controversial, was increasing the number of armed teachers in schools and stationing retired law enforcement officers in schools. So that's another one they may be exploring. We don't know where this is going to go yet. Obviously, they've had years to try to resolve this, and I believe anybody could say that this is a problem in our country, in our society. But we just don't know where this is going to go, and I think everybody is concerned who, at least on the Republican side of the aisle, is concerned about alienating the NRA, who would then run someone who would be very, very strong on gun control against even a long-term incumbent. And that's one of the worst fears of legislators, is a primary opponent who could defeat them.
Mm. And like you said, when they're on the constant fundraising thing and worried about being reelected, like you mentioned with the administration and the floating the trial balloons, the reason they're floating those balloons is because they want to keep their jobs in 3 years now. So they don't want to make a decision today that's going to jeopardize what happens in 3 years when it's time to vote again. And
well, the concern is, if I could say, you got an election in 8 months.
True.
The control of Congress hinges on that. And if you look at the trend that's been existing so far in special elections, Democrats are coming out ahead. Look at last November. Democrats took a number of governorships and other legislative positions, special elections, even in areas that Trump ran very, very strongly in 2016. Democrats are coming out ahead, and significantly ahead in many cases. So people are just wondering where one part or the other lies, and they're tired of some of the gamesmanship that's going on out there that has existed, and there is probably a lot of Democratic activism going on out there too, because they thought they had the White House won in 2016, and they didn't see the defeat of their candidate, and so now you're seeing a whole new activism rising up, much like the Tea Party did back in the Obama administration, to challenge the current status quo.
So as a person that's probably fiscally conservative and socially liberal, because that's what our faith calls on us to do. And that's why a lot of times I depend on my personal acts, if you will, versus what the government's going to do as far as taking care of our neighbors and those types of things. Catholics and Christians, that's what we're called to do. So whether it's putting money in the basket on Sunday or supporting, why I think it's wonderful that the government would support Catholic Relief Services, it's also something that we can support as individuals. So just looking for, as a Catholic, as a Christian, and watching what's going on, to me is, and like you've said, it can be disturbing to the point where you lose hope in the ability for it to ever return to where it was maybe when you and I were coming up, and that we get to the point of compromise. And is there anything that could bring that about, or are we just beyond?
Well, I don't think we're beyond. We're not at that point yet. I don't think. I think what we need to realize is that that it's not all about money. It's all about people.
Right.
Really. And if we keep people in mind, we're all going to do the right thing. We're all going to do the faithful thing, no matter what our faith calls. Because the basic tenets of any faith are pretty much the same. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Love your neighbors, yourself. Right. Treat each other fairly, honestly, with love. Take care of those who are poor, both personally and, our private endeavors can't totally meet the need. We wish we could, right, but it can't. So that's why the government steps in and provides things like Medicaid or credits for families with children and what have you. But there's still we have to search our souls. We have to search inside ourselves, and Lent is a perfect time to do that.
Amen.
To realize what is our calling to our brothers and sisters in the world, whether they're Americans, whether they're in another country, whether they're Muslims, whether they're Buddhists, whether they're Christians, whether they're Jews. And we all realize that underneath the skin, we're all alike, really. We all have the same values. I mean, I've traveled the world and on assignment, largely, and as well as personal enjoyment. And when I talk to people, no matter where it's at, it's developed in Western Europe or the poorest of poor in Haiti and Honduras, where I've been on assignment, they all want the same thing. And we all need to realize that and keep that in mind when we're sitting there trying to keep the barriers between us and them, when there really doesn't need to be. And that's what the bishops call us to do.
Right.
That's what the bishops keep us in mind, ask us to keep in mind, that we're all brothers and sisters in this world.
Amen.
And if I could add one more thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Last Wednesday, on Ash Wednesday, I had the chance, invited by Catholic Relief Services as they started their celebration of their 75th anniversary, to interview Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle from Manila. Wonderful gentleman. He's the president of Caritas Internationalis, the church's development and relief arm. It's the network of Caritas agencies around the world, including Catholic Relief Services. And the one thing I took away from that was that we're all got a little bit of migrant in us. We're all the same. We're all brothers and sisters. And we're all called to respect each other as brothers and sisters, which means holding up our bargain, our part of the bargain as Christians, to take care of them through not only our donations in the collection basket on Sunday and to the agencies like Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Charities and other Catholic agencies, but also through our tax dollars. That's what I understood it to mean. That's what it means to be Christian and Catholic.
Very good. I'm sure that if we open up the phone lines, you might get some arguments the other way. And I often wonder if they didn't take so many of our tax dollars and let us take care of that ourselves, that maybe it would be slightly different and not have the overhead of the bureaucrats. But there's a fine line between the two, because I don't always know how well managed those organizations are that are supposedly getting the tax dollars that and divvy them up. But I can certainly see your point, though, in a large country where they're able to collect the tax revenue that they do, and then to turn around and help the needy is absolutely required. I think the debate sometimes is to what lengths
it comes down to priorities. What are our priorities?
Right.
And the bishops, the U.S. bishops, belong to an organization or a loose amalgamation called Circle of Protection, and they argue that we have a moral obligation to protect and serve the most vulnerable, and that does require us as a society to determine whether our priority is to pay for programs that serve the poor, or whether programs are going to pay for military buildups. So we just have to make the priority. Who has the loudest voice in Congress often is the one who gets the priority set. So perhaps if we felt differently about how our priorities are being set in Congress, we might rise up and offer our voices to our congressional representative, our senators, and the White House and say, this is where we think our tax dollars should be spent. There's not a shortage of money. It's a shortage of where we're spending the money and how we decide to spend it.
Gotcha. Now, understood. And it's definitely complicated and something we're not going to resolve in an hour show. But one of the things that just strikes me is that a lot of times in these elections, especially in the last presidential election, I don't know that Mr. Trump necessarily won because everybody wanted to vote for him. It was more of a vote to not elect the other side. And so many times now in some of these elections, it just seems like the folks that we are given as an option are not always the best. And I think, at least from my own viewpoint, that a lot of times in leading up to these elections is prayer that, you know, God finds candidates to step up and do just what you're talking about, voice the need for the poorest of the poor, and work towards legislation that benefits everyone, not just particular groups, and that in the end that it's all in justice. And unfortunately, we don't see a whole lot of that. And I do want to thank you for breaking it down for us and explaining to us, you know, what goes on and how these things line up, the influences that people are under. I just think it's a monumental task sometimes for these folks to decide to run. I've actually been involved in the last year with an individual who was thinking about making a run for Senator Casey's seat here in Pennsylvania. And mm-hmm. when you sit down and you listen to the things that they need to do in order to even consider running, and the amount of money that they need to raise in order to get there and to get their name out, it's just incredible. And, you know, and these are good people. And at the same time, we know other good people that have run, and then when they get there, you know, seem to fall lockstep into whatever's going on. But I do want to thank you. I know you're a busy man. I want to thank you for taking the time to do the work that you do and to keep us informed. We look forward to seeing you in CatholicPhilly.com is the local publication here that we get online each week. And from time to time, your articles pop up, and obviously that's how we got in touch with you this time.
Right. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk, and hopefully we can do this again sometime.
Amen. Keep up the good work, Dennis. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All righty.
Thank you.
God bless.
Have a good Lent.
You too. God bless you. So my guest was Dennis Sadowski. Again, he's a reporter with Catholic News. And if you Google his name, you'll find a number of articles that he's written out there. And I have to admit that it's one of the hardest interviews I've done since I've taken over this spot, because it all depends on where you sit politically. And it just reinforces to me how difficult politics are and how far we've come as a country, and not necessarily in a good way, to learn the things that go on. And you know, for me, it now and most recently, it comes back to culture. That the culture that we live in today is a difficult one, to say the least, if you're a Christian. To have God driven out of our schools, to have God driven out of the public square. And I really believe, I firmly believe, that that's the root cause of a lot of this stuff that goes on today. Whether it's the culture of death and the disrespect for life, it all begins with the absence of God. For if we believe in God and we believe that He's our Creator and that all of us are created equal, and we walk past or drive past our brothers and sisters on the street each day and look at them and know that Christ is as much a part of them as He is a part of us, that we develop that respect for one another, things like what happened in Parkland and these other mass shootings, I think would be less. And I don't know that any law that our government passes one way or the other is going to have a dramatic impact in this culture that we're in, only because, you know, if where God doesn't exist, the evil one does. And these heinous acts that crop up from time to time are a constant reminder to me of how much the evil one is alive and well. And I don't know how much more rope God's going to give them and allow how much more evil He's going to allow to occur before He has His say. But I know, at least for me today, that is my prayer, that we need a fundamental change in the culture. One of the ways we do that is through this radio apostolate, to try to bring out the positive and the godliness, the fact that God is alive and well, that He is our Creator, that we're all brothers and sisters in Him. And together we can do marvelous, wonderful things. And apart, left to our own devices, we're at a complete loss. And you can look at it as narrowly as, and focus on the individuals, the individual that in my world struggles with addiction, and to see the miracle that happens when they come to know God again and believe that God loves them and has mercy for them. And imagine how that could impact the larger segment of society if that word was allowed to be to go out. So I want to thank you for being with me today for these 2 hours. I want to thank you for whatever part of your day that you've given to this radio apostolate. I also want to praise and thank God for each of you and whatever you do, whether it's prayer or financial support that you provide here, because as you can see from the show that we had today, it is so much needed in this world. So I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. And until then, my prayer is that God will hold you in the palm of His hand. Until then, take care and God bless.